Miss Yarra the Bird.
Ave Satana!
Hail
Satan! Hail Satan!
Greetings, heathens. Welcome to Hail Satan. This is the podcast exploring Satanism, culture, and life in general through the eyes of modern Satanists. I'm going to be your host today. My name is Joseph Rose. I'm a member of an independent congregation called Satanic Delco, and I am also a member of the Satanic Temple. Today, we're going to talk to a man who goes by the name Fidelis. He is also a member of Satanic Delco, and he's here to share his ideas about Satanism and Stoic philosophy, or Stoicism. Before we get to that, let me mention a group of fantastic new patrons who have joined the club here. We've got SV, Miranda, Mick, JJ, Etienne, and Derek. Thank you guys very much. Your support makes this whole thing possible, of course, and I'm really grateful for that. So thank you again. And I look forward to seeing everyone on our weekly Zoom and on Facebook and Discord and everything. Love it. I know I have been bypassing the listener mail for the last few episodes. I actually love doing the listener mail, but I've been a little extra busy lately, and I want to sort through a bunch of the messages that I have saved. And I plan to do another Ask a Satanist episode very soon. So if you want to participate in that, please do send me some email. Speaking of which, if you've got a moment to spare, please visit HailSatanPodcast.com. And on there, you'll find links to join me on the social media platforms. There's a form on the website where you can easily send me an email. So please do that. And, of course, there's a link on there to join our Patreon. We've got a few separate tiers, and you'll get access to bonus content and Satanic Delco and the Greetings from Hell. That reminds me, our first Greetings from Hell postcard has reached, I guess, most everyone by now. Hopefully the mail has gotten to everyone. I've been getting some really nice feedback. People seem pretty pumped about these postcards, and I am pretty pumped about them as well. So join us there. You can find everything at HailSatanPodcast.com. And now we are joined by our guest, Fidelis. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Joseph. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you for joining us today. I've been excited to talk to you about all of this.
Likewise.
So, you know, normally I like to start at the beginning. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about what role, if any, religion played early on in your upbringing?
I grew up Catholic. My parents, one thing that I really do appreciate about growing up with my parents is they let me explore different aspects. They were okay with me exploring, you know, Buddhism, different types of philosophy. They, you know, anything I asked for as a kid, I was really into encyclopedias. So they never discouraged any of my curiosities. As far as religion, we went to church on Sundays. I actually did go to like Catholic Sunday school. And that's where I kind of, you know, I kind of felt like it was just my duty to let my parents have that, even though I despise going to it. Mm. The things I learned there, it's like I felt uncomfortable because I didn't feel like I was taking in the information like everybody else did. And I did everything. I did the, you know, obviously the baptism and then the confirmation. But at some point after I joined the military, that's when I started realizing that, you know, it's really nothing that I want to pursue or even start to, you know, falsely claim. Yeah. So I, you know, I told my parents, you know, I'm more of an atheist kind of thing. And, you know, they welcomed it. And obviously they had some concerns, but the more I explained to them and the reasons why, they were welcoming of it.
How old were you when you realized that, you know, maybe I just don't really believe in this? And then also, how old were you when you had that talk with your parents?
Yeah, I think I was very young. I want to say I was like 11 or 12 when I started going to this Sunday school. And, you know, I just didn't feel like it was something that applied to me, in a sense that it was very like forceful, like you have to do this and you can't do this. And, you know, and if you're, you know, a bad person, you're going to go to hell and all that. So that's when I first started to think like, maybe this isn't like a nice group that I thought religion was, because, you know, before that, it was just like me going to the mass. Right. And then, you know, they gave you like a good, like type of sermon and say, you know, give examples of what a good person should be. So it wasn't really that when we started actually studying the Bible and things like that. So that's where I started feeling kind of like feel a little bit of an outsider. I was pretty shy, so I never like went against the teacher or anything.
Right.
So I just kind of kept that to myself. But when I actually started talking to my parents about it, it was around, I think, when I was like 18 or 17, like really close to when I was going to the military. And I think it was around the time where, you know, they ask you what you want on your dog tags, or, you know, what you want as, you know, as a service member, what are your wishes are. And that's when I, you know, well, this is something that's going to be on record, or something happens to me, obviously I should kind of discuss this with my parents first. And yeah, and that's kind of where I started with that conversation with them. And from that, you know, obviously I grew, because I was that kind of like militant atheist. And every time somebody said something about like religion, I was like, ah, no, it's not, you know, oh, look, you're dumb, or something like that. It was pretty abrasive at that.
I think a lot of us had that phase.
Yeah, right. But, you know, as I started to, you know, be more in tune myself and just, you know, maturing, you know, that kind of faded away, and I started to actually get into the Stoicism thing. So I think that kind of helped out a little bit too.
And when you did have that conversation with your parents, they were fairly understanding and reasonable?
Yes.
Cool.
Yeah, they were very, at first, obviously they were concerned, right? Because, you know,
sure.
I think they had that inkling that, or that kind of thing in the back of their head, minds, that, you know, I may not kind of follow the whole church thing. But, you know, because I always would be pointing out some things like, oh, hey, this is what, you know, this religion does. And what does our religion do, or whatever, and asking those kind of questions. And I think they weren't surprised, but maybe disappointed just a little, because they are traditional of Hispanic, you know, traditions.
Sure.
So they were a little disappointed. And again, they were a little bit of concern, but as, you know, time progressed and I started explaining things and why I wanted to be a good person, that I didn't have to follow a Bible or a religious group, they started to understand that. And, you know, I'm glad that my parents, you know, welcomed that conversation with open arms and open ears. And they're like, you know, I'm just proud that you're, you know, you're doing this for the good reasons, and not because, you know, you're going to be a bad influence to someone else. Or
right.
Something.
Yeah. It's nice when people have that type of reaction. You know, we've certainly heard plenty of stories where people aren't faced with that kind of reaction, you know,
right.
They get a really negative, sort of terrible pushback sometimes, and it's a bummer, but yeah, that's really cool that they were fairly understanding.
Mm-hmm.
Which came first for you, Satanism or Stoicism?
Stoicism came first to me. And one of the first things that I started to realize is, so the way that Stoicism came into my life is, so when I left the military, I had this like empty feeling in myself, because I had left the military and I didn't have anything, like any guidance, kind of like I was living on my own. I was like, okay, I'm going to try this thing. And I was working a lot. I was pretty much partaking in any indulgence that I wanted. So I didn't have a structure. And so like I said, I was distracting myself with work, and I started to realize that I didn't have a purpose to myself. Like, what am I doing?
I'm just so curious. What do you mean by these, you were sort of indulging yourself? Was this drugs or wild sex parties? What were you getting into?
So when you don't have a structure, and You're on your own. Like I indulged, I drank too much. I went out with friends and I just met up with random friends who were probably not the best kind of people. Right. Fortunately, I didn't do drugs or anything of the hard drugs or whatever. I did some weed and all that. But I did put myself in situations where I could have gotten hurt just because of the type of people I was hanging around with. And that kind of made me realize it's like, hey, maybe you're attracting the wrong kind of people.
Right.
Because I was trying to find that like camaraderie again, like that type of family outside, obviously my family, but like my military brothers.
Right.
So I was trying to find like that family with other people. And again, I not realize that they could possibly be a bad influence for me. So
when you discovered Stoicism or started to feel attracted to it, was this after you were already out of the military?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Did your experience in the military play any role in your interest? From someone like me with, you know, only a casual beginner's knowledge of it, it almost feels like maybe the military could encourage some of those ideas.
Yeah, I can see how the military could encourage those, but my experience with the military was a great experience. I did learn a lot. I definitely grew out of my shell because I used to be a very shy person. But after the military, you know, I went ahead and kind of did the things that I wanted to pursue. And maybe it's just like, again, that was my experience. There was a lot of things that were kind of forced into your head.
Yeah.
Obviously, I joined right after 9/11. So a lot of people have the mentality of like, oh, we're going to go out there and do this and do the harm to other people. So, you know, I was influenced by that.
Yeah.
But towards the end of my career, I was going to go deploy and I actually extended my contract to do that because that was my whole purpose of being in the military because I wanted to join. I wanted to serve my country, you know, and I'm proud of my service and I'm proud of my country. But at the same time, I just little by little, I started to say, well, maybe, you know, take back and just kind of look at it and not just follow everybody else and how everybody's feeling about this whole situation, you know?
Yeah.
So I think it's just a natural thing that happened within me that just kind of step back and kind of start looking at things in a bigger picture instead of just being part of the group and having the same mentality as everybody else. And it's easy because you're young. Obviously, I joined right after high school. So that type of environment definitely lures you into, everybody's here for the same thing. And
yeah, it's at that point you're still quite young and
impressionable
for sure.
Right? But again, like I said, my time there, I learned a lot. I gained valuable skills that I use now for my career, and you know, just the way I carry myself, everybody can tell right off the bat because I work with a lot of other military prior military members that you know, the way you talk, the way you present yourself.
Yeah.
So overall, it was a good experience. It was a good experience as well because I learned a lot about myself and about that experience as well, the good and the bad.
So you did your time in the military and somewhere after that, you got turned on to Stoicism. How did Satanism first come to your attention?
Well, I think I've always kind of liked the darker themes in life. As a kid, I kind of liked the dark art, like the imagery. So I kind of like fell alone and I'd never, ever shared that with anybody else. But when I actually learned about what Satanism is, it was the same time around, you know, when you're a teenager and, you know, you kind of open the Satanic Bible and you're just curious about it. But to me, it was not, it wasn't really that interesting. To me, it felt very kind of like a selfish type mindset. And I was like, well, I'm not really about this, but I mean, it's cool, I guess. But once I actually got exposed later in very recent years, last 2 years, when I saw the, Hail Satan documentary.
Yeah.
And I just love the whole like activism and you know, what it is, what it's now, what it's become. I think that was like, you know, I am an atheist, but I've always wanted that community, that that whole, you know, even though we in TST rituals, not a, you know, it doesn't invoke the supernatural thing, but it's more of a community thing. It's more like a, hey, let's hang out and let's do this together and feel part of a group because we have the same principles or mindset. And
yeah, that's probably a common barrier for a lot of people at first, because we're so used to the idea that religion comes with some inherent belief in the supernatural.
Right.
And so those two terms are like interlinked, like religion. Oh, I don't believe in religion. I'm not into like whatever magic stuff or beings. And we get to have all of the parts of a religion and just take away the supernatural stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of like what I first, how I kind of approached it, because like I said, I've knew about, you know, bits and pieces of other religions, and that not every religion does the praying, or not every religion has to do a communion, or so right off the bat, I was like, well, this is definitely something that could apply. And I could use this as something for me to practice essentially my atheism and the way I think about the world. And that was really nice to find out that there's actually a lot more people than I thought, you know, even in my circles, that, you're really into that? or open to it. Once you actually start having a conversation with people, like, oh, yeah, I heard of that. And I'm like, oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. So let's focus a little bit on the Stoicism. I'm sure we have a good bunch of listeners who are like, well, what the fuck does that mean? I looked it up. I like to just always look up a black and white definition of something, which I have here, but maybe you want to just brush over what Stoicism means in your words.
Yeah. So Stoicism, well, I can start off what it's not. Now, when you people first come across the word Stoic or Stoicism, you know, they think about, you know, having bearing, not showing emotion, suppressing emotion. But that's not what Stoicism is with a capital S. Stoic philosophy, to me, is the acknowledging of your emotions and preparing yourself for the inevitable, or checking how you're going to manifest those emotions instead of, you know, like not being quick to anger, not being disappointed in if it's something doesn't go your way or your favor. Basically, that's what it is. There's different pillars in it. Obviously, in Stoicism, one is the dichotomy of control, which is pretty much having control over your emotions, having control over your thoughts, and doing that self-reflection before action. And you have the virtues, like, you know, have courage, have temperance, justice, and wisdom. So as you apply those in your everyday thinking, you know, you start to notice what it is that you can control in your life instead of worrying about the things that you can't, essentially.
Just for some background, I guess, this began as an ancient Greek school of philosophy?
Yes, that is correct. By Zeno, that's where that started. And Stoicism, from what I remember, it's the kind of like a, that's where you talk and out in the open. Now, right. They used to do out in the markets and, you know, talk to people.
Yeah.
But how I discovered Stoicism was first by the book Meditations, which is by Marcus Aurelius. He was a Roman emperor, he was called the philosopher emperor. So, you know, with everything that he had to deal with, you know, he was an emperor. He had a care for this whole society, as well as lead his men to battle, as well with an epidemic, which I was surprised to know as well. He had to deal with a pandemic as well. So he had these books where he wrote his thoughts, and he kind of gave himself reminders and affirmations and why he has to be a good person and not let, you know, his temper get the best of him. And remind himself of the mentors he had in the past and what they would say. So that self-reflection was the whole point of him writing down his thoughts, to check his thoughts, you know, to check his mental health, essentially. And then his work obviously was, you know, recovered, and it's now a big staple in Stoicism.
I know he's not the founder of it, but no. He's considered sort of a prominent voice.
Correct. Yes. Yeah. So you'll see the works of Epictetus, again, Zeno. There's also, there's four of them, and I just put them on my Instagram too.
That's all right. Yeah. A big part of it is sort of learning to properly express emotions, mm-hmm. Rather than suppressing them.
Correct.
Did you just happen to notice ways that Satanism and Stoicism naturally overlap? What made you look for this combination of the two?
Well, so in generality, yes, that is what Stoicism is. But in the writings of these prominent Stoics, there's always this this common themes that they come up with. Is what is justice? What is our purpose in life? And the Stoics believe in a thing called logos, which is kind of like essentially the principle that dictates everything in the universe. So there's a reason why, you know, this happens in nature, or there's a reason why people do things. And naturally, they believe that people are here for one another. So, you know, themes of empathy, compassion, you know, all these things that the tenets of the Satanic Temple preach, that's why I was attracted to the Satanic Temple, because of these same ideas and principles that I saw in this group and in my philosophy, which I already kind of knew. And I was like, that goes very well together. Yeah. I can always overlap or find a tenet that can be combined or connected to something that a Stoic once said about community. And so it was, for me, it was really easy. I thought it was like these two kind of go hand in hand. Right. You know, one is a kind of group, but how do I embody these tenets? How do I use them in my everyday life? So Stoicism was the device to use to plug those tenets in and, you know, try to be the best version of myself.
The Stoicism serves as a way to functionally implement the ideas of the seven tenets into real life.
Yeah, because if you read them, you know, and I've noticed, you know, at first I just read them at face value. It says, you know, like the first one is to be compassionate and empathetic to all creatures in accordance with reason. But, you know, you have to dive deeper in what that actually means. So for me, like with that one, is to not only be compassionate to others, but be compassionate to yourself. So what is that going to look like? Is for me, one of the first things that I started noticing is self-reflection, mental health. So, you know, I've definitely dealt with anxiety and depression throughout my life, and my own will is going to be the only thing that's going to get me out of that rut. I have to have that compassion for myself to take care of my mental health, and forgive myself for anything. You know, I think I'm not worthy enough or what have you, and all these other thoughts that, you know, that depression can manifest within you. So that's kind of like the deeper questions that I would ask myself about all these tenets and every single tenet, you know, instead of just reading them and say, yeah, I kind of agree with them. Well, why do you agree with them? Why, you know, do you think these tenets are important to you, and can you apply them? Is this something that you want to embody and have part of your life? And if so, how are you going to embody them?
Yeah. So you were initially attracted to Stoicism and then surely did your research and attached yourself to it a bit. And then later on, when Satanism and the seven tenets come along, you start to naturally see these connections or similarities.
Right.
I had some notes here that you shared with me a little while back on all this, and some of the individual tenets, you have some connections and thoughts to specific Stoic ideas.
Yeah.
Maybe you want to, we can talk about some of those.
All right. So, so in Stoicism, empathy is a fundamental thing to live a fulfilled life. And, one of the things that I saw connection with, like the first 10, one should strive to act with compassion and empathy towards all creatures in accordance with reason, is the quote that Marcus Aurelius has, is that we ought to do good as good to others as simply as a horse runs or a bee makes honey or a vine bears grapes season after season without thinking of the grapes it's born. So, you know, as a Stoic and somebody who practiced Stoicism, you know, the main principle of Stoicism also is just to be a good person, not to have these expectations of, hey, I'm going to be a good person because I hope that person returns the favor to me. They believe that the logos and people are naturally good. So easily, I found that connection with one should strive to act with compassion and empathy. Yes, you're going to have times where people will stress you. Sometimes, you know, things out of control are going to anger you. But you got to step back and say, well, why is that person angry, causing this pain or anger within me? Is it out of ignorance? Is it something else? Is it because it's my personal opinion of what that person is doing? So again, in Stoicism, obviously you can thrive by yourself. You can survive on your own, but together in a community and realizing that we're here for one another, the whole community will thrive. And again, everybody has to do their piece, but having that kind of mindset makes people want to kind of emulate you in a maybe a subconscious way and say, you know, he's not quick to anger or she's not quick to anger. I should probably do the same and, you know, embody your philosophy instead of saying it.
Is Stoicism expressly pro-community?
Yes. Yes. We're here for one another. That's what the Stoics believe, that, you know, everything in the world is natural. There's evil, there's people who are greedy, but we need to address why these things are the certain way they are. Like, why are they greedy? Is it because are they greedy and they're stealing? Why are they stealing? Well, you know, because maybe poverty or, right. You know, when I'm talking in generalities, like they like to go into thinking what the root cause is.
Sure. Essentially. And that's empathy.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. You gotta see it in the eyes of that person. You gotta put yourself in there, not only cognitively, but emotionally.
All right, cool. Keep going. Give me some more of these. Yeah.
All right. And then let's see, line number two, the struggle for justice is an ongoing necessary pursuit that should prevail over the laws and institutions. And again, when you think back at like ancient Greece and Rome, like they were the first kind of philosophers that, you know, told kind of had that discussion of what justice is. And on one of the quotes that Marcus has is think on this doctrine that reasoning beings were created for one another's sake. To be patient is a branch of justice, and that man sin without intending it. So, you know, you gotta think of in a society, if you have people who break the law, it's just a symptom of that society. You have to look deeper into why you're having this issue. And like I said earlier, you have to have that root analysis instead of saying, oh, well, you know, this group of people are bad and we should, you know, try to keep them in their area and have already your preconceived notions of a certain group.
Yeah.
You know, just like what in today's world, when we're seeing different types of injustices. And people are starting to realize it's like, hey, let's find a solution to this problem instead of just leaving it what it is and just thinking that people are going to be people and just put them in that box and, you know, not think about it and focus on our own issues. Yeah. Like, no, we need to go to that root cause. What is causing all of this and have those conversations? Societal self-reflection.
That tenet usually makes me think about, I always think of that idea of the spirit of the law.
Right.
And, you know, we have cases, when people ask me about that one, or we talk about that one of the most obvious examples that comes to mind is something like civil rights.
Right.
Where the actual law of the land said that some people aren't equal. You know, certain people can only go here, or people can't vote, or different rules apply to these different people. And that was the actual law of the land. And so it was up to the people on the ground to decide, well, no, you know, we have to strive for justice even when it is in conflict with laws and institutions.
Right. And those even, you know, there's those who are going to want to protect the laws and those who, yeah, maybe help write the laws, but then reflected on, no, you know, we should change this. You know, we've made a mistake. They have done that reflection. And, you know, even people who are not part of the group that's being oppressed, you know, they say, you know what, what we're doing is wrong. We should have this conversation. So we should, you know, a protest and have these difficult conversations. They're doing that self-reflection. A society is doing a self-reflection of like, yeah, this isn't working for us anymore. This is not fair. This is not just.
Yeah. All right, cool. Let's do it. Keep moving.
All right. Number three, one's body is inviolable, subject to one's will alone. And again, I very much agree on everything that TST does with this tenet, especially like the reproductive rights campaigns that you do.
Yeah, that's like a main focus for them.
Right,
yeah.
Right. It's amazing what they're doing with that. And I totally agree with it. But for me as an individual, somebody who wants to embody these, what does that look like for me?
Yeah.
So I have a quote from Epictetus, and it says, "Now is the time to get serious about living your ideals. How long can you afford to put off what you really want to be? Your nobler self cannot wait any longer. Put your principles into practice now." So this to me is, yes, you have the body, but the body also includes the mind, includes everything. So, you know, if I get into a rut or, hey, I don't feel like doing this anymore, I want to give up, it's my will that's going to get things going. Nobody's going to do this for me. Nobody's going to go with the therapy for me. Nobody's going to take the medication for me. Yeah. It's up to myself to want to accept help. It's going to be my will to take care of this body. You know, even basic terms, if, you know, hey, I need to lose some weight or something, it's like, it's my will alone to take care of my body, to feed it what it needs in order to feel the way that I want to feel.
Yeah, so, sort of a focus on a personal responsibility.
Right. Yeah. It's up to me to be responsible for myself, my body, my mind.
That one's particularly interesting. I guess the stoic focus is almost a little more of the internal.
Right. Yeah.
Where I guess our normal casual conversation around that tenet in Satanism is more external, physical type of stuff.
Right.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting.
You know, it's just interesting and just trying to dig deeper into it and, you know, kind of like just analyze it a bit more and just you can start to get your own ideas on what that is to you instead of just what the face value of the tenet is.
For sure. You know, we know those seven tenets are, you know, rather open to interpretation. There's always interesting discussions and debates about what they can mean to different people and in different circumstances. So I'm sure the same applies to Stoic philosophy and most philosophy, really.
Right, right. And then that's when you do that, you start to see what are your priorities. What is it that, what do you want to make your life's purpose? Because you start to see that, like for me on this one is like motivation, the initial trying to help myself for my mental health reasons, you know, that's what you see, what your priorities are. And maybe later in life, that could be something else.
And that one particularly strikes me as more representative of what I would think of about Stoicism. Mm-hmm. That idea of, I don't know, not it's not necessarily an individualism, but like we said, like an accountability.
Right.
Like just a little bit of, well, get your ass in gear. Man up, son. You can do it. You know, that kind of thing, you know.
Right.
Cool. Give us another one.
Let's look at tenet number four. This one was particularly, again, interesting. I think a lot of people have this discussion too, is the freedoms of others should be respected, including the freedom to offend. To willfully and justly encroach upon the freedoms of another is to forego one's own. And then again, this one as a Stoic practitioner, you know, being slow to anger and developing empathy, and checking your emotions first, I think that would help you to not get into applying this tenet, essentially. So, you know, why get into the point of offending someone willfully and unjustly in the first place? For me, it's, you know, check yourself first before you willfully. Why would you willfully want to offend someone else? Obviously, and I've, Joseph, we have a lot of people had the discussions. Well, you know, just being a Satanist is offensive to somebody else, right?
Sure.
Right. So, you know, that's something external. And as a Stoic, you know, if that offends someone, that's their problem.
Yeah.
What I can control is the way I react to that person being offended me. I can be empathetic to them. It's just, you know, they don't understand what Satanism is. Having those first thoughts to yourself, you know, why is that person offended by you? And then hopefully you get to the point where, you know, you educate that person on what a Satanist is, what modern Satanism is, and what do you actually believe in? What are the seven tenets? And that's one of the things that, and I believe Marcus Aurelius, one of his quotes is, you're here to educate others or to tolerate them. So, you know, there's different things you can do. You can just ignore them, tolerate them, or, you know, educate them in the manner. In Stoicism, you try not to obviously react to why they're being offensive to you. And, you know, you can control your actions.
I would almost think, too, that from the Stoic side of things, it almost feels like that one can apply to the person being offended rather than the person doing the offending. If something comes into your path and you find it offensive personally, it's kind of all about, why is this offensive to me? What am I going to do with this offended feeling? Because I always put a lot of the focus when we talk about that one, the right to offend, you know, that's maybe the most popular one of all. We talk about that one a lot, especially to people that are brand new to the seven tenets. That's often the one that they ask about. And my feeling about the offended part is that that feeling is sort of the responsibility of the offended.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that's definitely a Stoic principle too, like a Stoic theme that, you know, it is something in your control. Those are your thoughts. And like you said earlier, why are you offended? Where's that coming from?
Yeah.
Do that self-reflection. Then that self-reflection, you know, you have this hard conviction, like this very deep-rooted conviction on, you know, this is the way it should be, and now you're offended about it. You know, sometimes self-reflection is painful, and maybe you're wrong about it, right?
Yeah.
So that's
I don't know if this is this. I don't know if there's a simple answer to this, but according to the Stoic philosophy, as you interpret it, when you're offended, when a person is offended by something, be it, you know, something religious or something in out there in pop culture or whatever it might be, is there a sort of guideline that you have for how to behave or what the right course of action is when you are offended?
Yeah, well, if you're offended, obviously you check your thoughts. And one of the good quotes that I like from Epictetus is that any person that's capable of angering you becomes your master. He can anger you only if you permit it and you permit yourself to be disturbed by him. So that right there tells me, so if I'm offended, you know, you have control over that. You have to look into yourself and, you know, don't be quick to the anger. Check your thoughts. Check why you know, you're like I said, why you're offended.
I really like it.
Yeah,
I think I really like it.
Yeah, and then every time I get angry with someone, I remember that he's becoming your master. Don't let him become your master.
Yeah, and just learning this stuff, and you know, you're obviously way far into it. Like having these ideas, just having the seeds planted in your mind over time.
Right.
You find that they reemerge, they show themselves in the moments when they're useful. And, you know, maybe you find yourself getting worked up over something or offended or whatever the situation might be. And, and you're reminded, you know, I find the same thing that happens with the seven tenets, you know, just like a little reminder. They're always there. We know what they mean. Yeah. We know how to act and we want to think we're good people anyway, but it's nice to just have a little thing that will pop up in the back of your mind and say, oh, remembered, let's just focus on compassion. Let's do the right thing.
Right. And the more tools and the more things that you have to help you to become a good person, you know, the more they come up and the more you get reminded of these things.
I like it. I'm liking it a lot. Go ahead. Go on.
All right. Number five, belief should conform to one's best scientific understanding of the world. One should take care never to distort scientific facts to fit one's belief. And now this one got me thinking again of the Stoic term logos. So as you know, science explains everything in the natural world to us, you know, through the scientific method and discourse. And logos is essentially already what exists as natural law. So, you know, one quote that comes to mind right now is like the one from Marcus Aurelius. And an infected mind is a far more dangerous pestilence than any plague. And this, again, is to referring to the pandemic that he was going through with his society. And it continues with one only threatens your life. The other destroys your character. So, you know, we have to be careful on what we do with the certain facts. We need to see for things how they are. We need to make sure that we take an account. Like let's say in science, and I think this one I personally thought about, you know, people saying, well, the vaccine is, I should take it if I want to, because, you know, it's my body. I do what I want. But then, you know, there's the second tenet where you have to be compassionate to others, and being compassionate to others is to, you know, make sure that you do your part for the community, for everyone. And again, that's my personal thoughts on it. Naturally, the virus is something natural. We have our science. We have our knowledge of what a vaccine can do for you. And with applying this and my Stoic philosophy is like, what are my actions? Are they for myself, my selfishness, or are they for the greater good? And that's how kind of I see this one. And apply it to Stoicism is, you know, there's things natural in the world and, you know, things can be explained, and I'm going to make my best decision. And I decided to take the vaccine because I want to care for the rest of the community, not just for myself. So also Marcus Aurelius was a seeker of truth. He always wanted to, you know, get down to what the truth of things were and not just see them as, you know, as they were. And he was glad to, you know, take on responsibility for something that he had a wrong perspective of. And that's one of the quotes where he says, if anyone can refute me, show me I'm making a mistake or looking at things from a wrong perspective, I'll gladly change. It is the truth I'm after, and the truth never harmed anyone.
Yeah.
And that's in Meditations. Yeah.
That's such an important idea that I think everybody everywhere would be better off if they had a little bit more of that willingness to be wrong.
Right.
It's such a hard thing sometimes, you know, it's so tough on the ego.
Right.
To be wrong and to be in a position where, especially if it involves the public in any way, or even a group, you know, your family, your friends, your schoolmates, whatever it could be, it's so hard to be wrong sometimes. But as an older guy, you know, as I've gotten older, I've been way more willing and okay with the idea that, oh, I was wrong. You know, my bad.
Right.
You know, I'm sorry. Let me figure this out, you know?
Right.
But man, as a younger guy, that was so hard.
Yeah.
It really, the ego really does not want to be wrong.
No. And especially when, let's say you're in the military and you're around all these other military people who, you know, you just influence and you know, feed from each other's energies. Like, no, we're this, and you know, no, I'm made of diamonds. Nobody can touch me. Right. Kind of thing, attitude. And yeah, it's hard sometimes, and it's harder for even if you're older and you had these, you know, certain beliefs or had a certain conviction, and you slowly trying to realize that maybe you were wrong this whole time, and you know, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, sometimes it does take a while, but right. Yeah, I think man, it's such an important quality. I think the sooner everybody can get hip to just being okay with that, the better we all are as individuals.
Yeah, and so yeah, like you said, sometimes self-awareness can hurt.
Yes, for sure. You just have to be willing to be wrong. And I've found that it's not bad at all. You know, I've found that people, when you're sincere and you admit you're wrong, or you seek the truth or whatever it might be, I feel like generally people are pretty accommodating to that. You know, when you're sincere, people will more often than not accept it and be with you. Cool. Let's keep it going.
All right. Let's see. We're on 10, number 6. People are fallible. If one makes a mistake, one should do one's best to rectify it and resolve any harm that might have been caused.
Yeah, there it now, is.
Yeah. So one of the things that I definitely noticed when I was reading Meditations is a quote by Marcus Aurelius is, when you are offended at any man's fault, immediately turn to yourself and reflect, in what manner have you yourself have wronged? So if somebody makes a mistake or it causes you a certain kind of pain or anything, you know, you got to have that in the back of your mind that, you know, you're also fallible. You've made those mistakes as well. You can't be a hypocrite and, you know, turn your back on someone because they made the mistakes that you have. You can decide to either educate or, you know, again, forgive depending on the circumstance. And that's kind of like a individual type perspective on this. And let's say in a society, again, we're all humans. When you put us all together, you know, we're going to do some great things and we're going to do some not great things. So, so when I think about this is, instead of, seeing crime as something that if you committed the crime, you know, that's what you are, you're a criminal now. And if society at some point has to find ways to let that person give themselves another chance. I can also think of this like in terms of ego, and ego can be in the enemy. If we're not willing to become self-aware of our, you know, convictions, our behaviors, or words in the first place, then we are setting ourselves up to either offend her or dismiss those who are truly seeking redemption. So, you gotta give others the opportunity, because you know we're all gonna make mistakes.
Yeah, when we talk about that tenet, the people are fallible, we're normally focused on the idea that, like, when it's us, when me, the individual, has made the mistake, and now I'm seeking forgiveness or I'm seeking to make it right. We focus on that side of it. But then there is the other side of it that I'd been giving a little more thought to recently. I posted a little bit for discussion in our group in Satanic Delco, focusing on the sort of the other side of that one, where I think that the question I ended up asking was simply, which do you value more, justice or forgiveness? Because when that person, according to that tenet, is they've realized they're fallible, they've made a mistake, they want to do it, they want to make it right, and part of that might require your forgiveness.
Right.
And so they're making the effort, they're seeking to make it right, and now it's up to you. Now, are you just focused on justice? Are you focused on this ideal of you must pay and you did this wrong and now you have to live with it? Or can there be genuine forgiveness? And man, we could probably talk for an hour just about that. You know, the idea of who even benefits more from that forgiveness? It's hard to say. You know, the person seeking forgiveness, surely they need that, that will help them. But I've found that carrying that grudge or denying that forgiveness can be just as troublesome.
Right. It can eat you. It can eat you
for a long time.
It can bring up other emotions, anger.
Yeah.
And I think I responded to that discussion in just simple terms. I mean, as a Stoic, as an individual, I think as an individual, you can definitely focus on the forgiveness. That's something that you can do in a society. Yeah. And in a society, you definitely focus and prioritize the justice.
Yeah. Yeah. You hear it all the time. There are those stories of a mother whose child has been killed or something, you know, any of these terrible situations. And you hear them say, oh, well, I forgive the person. You know, this guy is in jail for murder or some terrible thing. And mm-hmm. And the family says, well, we forgive him, you know, and very often these are religious people, you know, they're very often Christians. Mm-hmm. And it's nice. And sometimes it's almost hard to even understand. It's like, how can you forgive them? You know, it's a sort of gut reaction.
Right.
But they don't want to carry around this anger,
right,
you know, for the rest of their lives. And it probably just benefits everyone more to lean toward the forgiveness.
Right. And then it could be, yeah. And like you said, it could be because of religious reasons, but also be because of yourself. That's what you want to do. And you want to release that energy from yourself and, yeah, you know, actually forgive that person. And I believe that would take immense amount of like compassion and empathy. I can't even think of a situation where I would be in that, and I can never understand it unless I'm in that position. But
yeah, for sure.
That's pretty deep.
It's intense. It's intense for sure. If I think about it myself, you know, if I were that person and I was faced with like, can I forgive something? Like, you know, where's the limit, you know? But you know, we hope that not too often are we actually tested with these ideas, but
right,
you know, sometimes they happen, you know.
Sometimes they happen. Yeah, correct.
All right, cool. What else have we got?
We got the last tenet. Every tenet is a guiding principle designed to inspire nobility in action and thought. The spirit of compassion, wisdom, and justice should always prevail over the written or spoken word. So Stoicism allows me to navigate the world around me and navigate my emotions as well. So with this and Stoicism and this tenet, it gives me the ability to change my mind. It gives me the ability to do the self-reflecting, to have the self-awareness, to make sure that I have the ability to adapt, to reflect, to debate, to improve, and just become the best version I can. Because whatever I'm thinking right now and how I apply these things to these tenets, like later in life, I can go through, a life change or an experience that's going to, you know, maybe rock my whole world in the way I think. And if I'm still applying this tenet and Stoicism, I can definitely self-reflect, change my views, and then that will in itself show me my priorities as a person now in that very moment. So I love the fact that they have this tenet because, you know, you should strive to be noble and, you know, have the ability to adapt. And, you know, like it says, there's just guiding principles for you to adapt in the world. And I love that.
Yeah, I always consider that seventh tenet sort of a nice summary of all of the ideas. You know, it sort of packs them all into one whole and points it in a direction. And maybe kind of the same with the Stoic counterparts to it.
Right, because you have the four virtues in Stoicism, and that's like, again, you got to have the wisdom. You got to use those tools, wisdom, courage, temperance, and justice. So and apply those, you know, one situation is going to be different from the other one. And as long as you're applying, you know, your tools to it, and you have them ready, you can, you know, you can navigate the world a little bit better.
Now, are you planning to develop more of a documented philosophy that combines all of these things?
You know, I think we had a Monday meeting one time with Satanic Delco, and you, what was the question? You said, if you had, I think it was like 2 or 5 years to live,
yes,
what would you do?
Yeah,
right?
5 years, yeah.
Yeah, and I thought to myself, and, you know, I think these two things definitely improved my life. And what am I gonna have to pass? I only had, let's say, 2 years to live. What am I gonna pass? And the only thing I think right now is, hopefully people remember me for my character, but also like this knowledge would be nice to pass on to someone else. Thinking like, well, maybe what if you, you know, kind of put this all down in written form or something? And so I was like, well, let me try and see kind of how interested people may be. And that's actually how I decided to start that Instagram page, the Satanic Stoic Philosophy.
Yeah. And, yeah, definitely. I'm going to, by all means, tell people where they can find you and learn all about this stuff. But yeah, I was wondering if you were planning to actually really lay this out somewhere or connect all your thoughts a bit on it.
Right. I thought that was a really cool idea. But at first, like I said, I was just like, these are my personal experiences with these two, you know, philosophies, and, you know, let me see how I can take this and how I can, you know, put it together. And if people are really interested, then probably something that I would be very interested in doing. So,
yeah, well, I hope you do it, man. I am really interested. I forget where you first mentioned all this, where I saw it somewhere in Satanic Delco or on one of our chats, but I was interested right away, and seeing some of your notes and listening to you today, I'm just a huge fan of this idea, and I can't wait to see more and learn more about it.
Well, I'm glad, Joseph. Like I said, I've been excited to talk about this because, you know, it's easy to talk about Stoicism, right? But it's not easy to talk to other people who may or may not take it in a positive way with the satanic spin on it.
Yeah. And, so, you know, we've chatted a bit. I mean, we're so young in this modern Satanism, certainly as it relates to the Satanic Temple and their ideals. And there's so much room for interpretation in those tenets. And there is certainly plenty of room for people to formulate their own philosophies and put their own spin on it. I think it's a great time for such a thing.
Right. And I think we had a conversation last meeting about like chapter leaders and, you know, things and conflicts and misinterpretations and some people may call it misleadership. Like Plato said, states will never be happy until rulers become philosophers or philosophers become rulers. And that was Plato in the Republic. And so if we apply a little bit of philosophy into TST or some of the chapters, I think that can harbor good discussions where we want to take this modern Satanism. And I think also that if people start to see that, you know, we're doing this self-reflection that, you know, I keep talking about, and embody these tenets, people are going to start seeing that, look, they're, you know, we thought they were just a group of trolls, you know, they're actually a religious group that actually wants to do good.
Let us know the Instagram account, and I will definitely also make sure to put it in the show notes and everything. Where can they find you?
Yeah, so they can find me on Instagram at Satanic Stoic Philosophy. That's all together. But I've been having fun, and people have been commenting and or messaging me and sharing the content. So it's been really nice, and being able to actually talk about Stoicism in a satanic perspective.
Yeah, that's great. I'm going to do my best to aim people your way, because I think it's really cool, and
thank you.
People
thank you.
Should get hip to it. Fidelis, thank you very much for doing this. I feel like it's opened my eyes to yet another thing I need to find the time to learn more about. It's never ending, but I love it. Thank you very much.
All right.
Take it easy.
Bye.
All right, everyone. That is the show for this week. Thank you so much for joining me once again. If you've got a moment, visit HailSatanPodcast.com. Push all the buttons and stuff. I'd like y'all to stay safe out there, okay? Hail Satan. Sugar than ever. He will flee, sir.